Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We face the most important election in American history. And we face a choice. Where will you stand on this battleground America? Here's your host, Tara Servatius.
It was a lie, folks. A fraud. They terrorized the public with COVID, and they used the death numbers to drive the terror. Now we're finding out they weren't really, well, real. A shocking admission from the CDC, folks. I have been waiting for this number for months, and finally we have it right off the CDC website. 189,000 people died of COVID. Actually, no, they didn't. Just 6% of those deaths, the CDC now admits, were true COVID deaths. Whoa! Well, what about the rest? Those folks had, on average, 2 to 3 other serious illnesses when they died, and they had COVID too. You mean COVID didn't primarily kill them? Nope. But they used the way they coded those deaths to terrify the public. Folks, this is going to go down in history someday when we're past this election, and we can be honest about it, as one of the biggest frauds ever perpetrated on the American people and on the world. So what does that mean? It means roughly 11,000 Americans have truly died of COVID, the way you truly die of the flu. Well, for comparison, how many people on average die of the flu every year? About 60,000. How many have truly died of COVID? About 11,000. And the CDC has admitted it. Now, on this podcast, I obviously can't show you a link, but I'd encourage you to go to my Twitter account, at Tara Servatius. I've got all the links up there so you can go right to the CDC site and see it for yourself. You don't have to take my word for it. It is a shocking admission. I didn't think we'd see this from them until after the election. But here it is. Quote from the CDC site, for 6% of the deaths, COVID-19 was the only cause mentioned. For deaths with conditions or causes in addition to COVID-19, on average, there were 2.6 additional conditions or causes per death. Think about that. There was never any reason to shut down and wreck the economy. There was never any reason to swell the unemployment rolls by 20 million. God, 20 million people's lives wrecked. Thousands of businesses. Just 6%? Yeah, about 11,000. Just 6% of the 187,000 supposed COVID deaths were true, pure COVID deaths. All the rest, again, 2 to 3 other serious illnesses were present. It's an absolute scandal. Now, wait, I want to remind you how we got here. We got here through government-mandated coding fraud. Because we don't code COVID deaths like we code anything else. In fact, in March, remember the CDC put out a coding guideline. Anyone can read it. It's very short. It's 2 pages. Very self-explanatory. That if somebody has COVID, if they test positive for COVID or are merely suspected of having COVID, you code it as a COVID death. Doesn't matter if there are 2 or 3 other causes of death. He had heart disease and he was dying of cancer. Doesn't matter. After he went into the hospital, he tested positive for COVID. COVID death. But would he have died anyway? Oh, yeah. He was stage four. COVID death. That's how they code it. We code nothing else that way. How did we get here? How did we get to such a massive, now admitted by the CDC, level of fraud? Gotta go back to Italy to understand it. We sent the National Institutes of Health over to Italy because, remember, they were having all the deaths and all the panic, and it was terrible. And they took a look at how they were coding the deaths there. Laura Ingraham and the London Telegraph reported on that. Remember this?
Italy, very interesting, has been grappling with the same debate for weeks. Here's what the Daily Telegraph reported. According to Professor Walter Ricciardi, is the scientific advisor to Italy's Minister of Health. This is what he said. He said, the way in which we code deaths in our country is very generous in the sense that all people who die in hospitals with the coronavirus are deemed to be dying of the coronavirus. On reevaluation by the National Institute of Health, only 12% of death certificates have shown a direct causality from coronavirus, while 88% of patients who have died have at least one pre-morbidity. Many had two or three.
So what did the government do? We copied the Italian coding system and we brought it here. Again, we code nothing else this way, only COVID. That's why they're able to report such a massive death toll. But it's not a true COVID death toll. Here's Dr. Scott Jensen. He was the physician of the year in 2016 in Minnesota and is a pretty respected guy. Here's Jensen explaining what's wrong with this COVID coding system mandated by the NIH, the NIAID, that's the agency Anthony Fauci heads, and the CDC.
Let's just take influenza. If I have a patient died a month ago, had fever, cough, and died after 3 days, and maybe had been an elderly, fragile individual, and there happened to be an influenza epidemic around our community, I wouldn't put influenza on the death certificate, and I've never been encouraged to do so. I would put probably respiratory arrest would be the top line, and the underlying cause of disease would be pneumonia, and in the contributing factors, I might well put emphysema or congestive heart failure. But I would never put influenza down as the underlying cause of death, and yet that's what we're being asked to do here.
Not that we have to take Dr. Scott Jensen's word for it, or even Laura Ingraham's. Here's a mashup of Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Deborah Birx, those who advise Trump, advise Trump on COVID, admitting how it's coded.
If someone dies with COVID-19, we are counting that as a COVID-19 death.
Now, I can't imagine if someone comes in with coronavirus, goes to an ICU, and they have an underlying heart condition and they die, they're going to say cause of death, heart attack. I cannot see that happening.
Need any more proof? Here's Illinois Department of Public Health official Ngozi Ezike explaining how they code COVID deaths to the media.
So that means that if you were in hospice and had already been given, you know, a few weeks to live, and then you also were found to have COVID, that would be counted as a COVID death. It means that if technically, if you died of a clear alternate cause, but you had COVID at the same time, it's still listed as a COVID death. So
now the question becomes, can the media keep this a secret until the election? This is the Democrats' key claim against Trump. He is responsible for 187,000 COVID deaths somehow, except there weren't 187,000 COVID deaths. So far, really only 11,000, one-sixth as deadly as the average annual flu. It's simple, folks. The strongest claim Trump had to re-election was the economy. It had to be destroyed. In particular, the most important jobs and gains to destroy were the record low unemployment rates for Black people, for Hispanics, for blue-collar workers, for women, those key groups that are usually Democrat vote strongholds. It had to be wiped out. And the only way to do it is to drive the terror. And the only way to drive the terror is with a fake death count. Folks, this has all been engineered. And when I say a fake death count, again, it's not that COVID doesn't kill. Obviously, it's already killed at least 11,000 of us. It's just that it doesn't kill at anywhere near as high a rate as the flu does. This thing has been blown clean out of proportion. Meanwhile, if you had any doubt that looting and violence wasn't totally hip right now on the left. This ought to cure you of it. NPR now defending looting as necessary for liberation. This is cuckoo for Cocoa Puff stuff. And it's right there on NPR. You know why they ran this? Because in the circles they run in, left-wing circles, this is normal thought. The interview by NPR is with a woman by the name of Vicky Osterweil. She wrote the book In Defense of Looting. What you're about to hear is so insane, it's unbelievable any editor ever published it on the NPR website as actual thought. That's worth considering. But I bring this up and I'm spending so much time on it because I want you to understand how they think. I want you to understand that for them, this is not this looting. It's not about temporary anger caused by some injustice they saw on CNN. This is a philosophy. It's unified. It's Marxist. And it's dangerous. The NPR interview argues that looting is a necessary tool for liberation, that small businesses and small business owners are bad people. They're bad. They're evil. Attacking them is attacking oppression and thus is good. And the idea of anybody owning property is morally wrong. Well, except the violent left-wing looters. Apparently, that's okay for them. But not for anybody else. Listen to this transcript. The question for the author was, can you talk about rioting as a tactic? What are the reasons people deploy it as a strategy? Well, Osterweil says, it does a number of important things. It gets people what they need for free immediately, she says, which means they are capable of living and reproducing their lives without having to rely on jobs or a wage. That's looting's most basic tactical power as a political mode of action. She says it attacks the very way in which food and things are distributed. It attacks the idea of property, and it attacks the idea that in order for someone to have a roof over their head or have a meal ticket, they have to work for a boss in order to buy things that people just like them somewhere else in the world had to make under the same conditions. It points to the way in which that's unjust. And the reason that the world is organized that way, obviously, is for the profit of the people who own the stores and factories. And that looting, she says, demonstrates that without police and without state oppression, we can have things for free. Osterweil continues, with the NPR interviewer egging her on, looting strikes at the heart of property, of whiteness, and of the police. It gets to the very root of the way those three things are interconnected. And it also provides people with an imaginative sense of freedom and pleasure and helps them imagine a world that could be. And I think that's a part of it that doesn't really get talked about, that riots and looting are experienced as a sort of joyous and liberatory thing. Yeah, looting is liberation. We should celebrate it. It's awesome.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
She continues, the history of the movement for liberation in America is full of looters and rioters. They've always been a part of our movement. But what about the victims? What about the small business owners? The family-owned businesses? She says on NPR, a business being attacked in the community is ultimately about attacking like modes of oppression that exist in the community. So you're not attacking a community, burn it down, look at whatever you want. It's great. No, it's so good. Wait a minute. Why do small businesses and small business owners need to be attacked? Quote, when it comes to small business, family-owned business, or locally-owned business, they are no more likely to provide worker protections. They are no more likely to have to provide good stuff for the community than big businesses. It's actually a Republican myth that has, over the last 20 years, really crawled into even leftist discourse. That the small business owner must be respected. That the small business owner creates jobs in his part of the community. But that's actually a right-wing myth. NPR folks, I'm telling you, this kind of thought is mainstream on their side. Why? This is classic Marxist communist thought. It's what drives them now. It's what they're fighting for in the street. They're not mad about George Floyd. They're not fighting about Jacob Blake. This is a communist revolution. This is hip. It's hot. Meanwhile, over the weekend, an Antifa militant walked up to a Trump supporter in Portland and executed him. Here's what Dinesh D'Souza tweets about this, and it's perfect. Antifa is celebrating this. The left is moving from prosecuting political opponents to executing them. The guardrails of society are coming off. Oh, come on, you say. D'Souza's exaggerating. Is he? You want to hear Antifa celebrate their kill? I've got it on video. This is the moment they learn that the guy who was killed was a Patriot Prayer member. Keep in mind, folks, these aren't right-wing protesters. That group you saw there wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts and screaming, cheering for the death of this man. But regardless, Joe Biden, who didn't condemn or even acknowledge the violence until last week when his poll numbers began declining, is now planning, he tells the New York Times, to leave his basement for a mystery campaign stop to blame the riots on Trump. You know, the guy who's offered blue state after blue state, federal agents, backup, National Guard, whatever they need to combat the violence, and they've all turned him down, by and large. But somehow, this is Trump's fault. Folks, I want to talk about what happened in Portland over the weekend because it is the exact same pattern as we've seen in Kenosha. This violence by left-wing looters and rioters is being stage-managed by governors and mayors who are Democrats. It happens the same way again and again. On last week's podcast, I walked you through it. The governor of Wisconsin was begged for 750 National Guard members by local police. They said they couldn't handle the violence. He turned them down. He sent 250 National Guard instead. Trump called him up and begged him to take the officers he had on standby. Would have filled in the gap. They could have gotten to 750. What does the governor say? Nah. Why? Because they want the violence. How do you know they want the violence? Because the attorney general of that state hid the fact for several days that Jacob Blake, the police shooting victim, had a knife and had admitted he had a knife during the shooting. They knew that and they told no one. allowing the media to repeat over and over and over that he was an unarmed man who was shot in the back. Not quite. That's how you foment violence. You hold back the details of the incident that's sparking the anger. Then you hold back or refuse to provide the law enforcement necessary to put it down. And these incidents could all be put down. These cities could be reclaimed. The left is refusing to. These Democrat officials deliberately create, I say stage manage, the conditions necessary. How do we know that number of guard could have stopped the violence and the killing in Kenosha, Wisconsin? Because after the violence and the killing, they sent the guard in. And guess what? Take a listen.
It has been peaceful here for 4 days now. There are more than 1,000 National Guard troops. This morning, we saw a few dozen more arriving in front of the Kenosha County Courthouse. And Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson is touting the impact that the Guard has had here.
The way you stop the violence, the way you stop the rioting, is you surge manpower and resources, citizen soldiers, National Guard, and you overwhelm the numbers of rioters so that they can't riot, so that you can protect people's First Amendment constitutional right to peacefully protest, and they don't turn to riots.
So we don't need a national conversation. We don't need to hold hands and sing kumbaya. We don't need to search our souls to figure out how we can stop the looting and the rioting. Democrat leadership in these states need to stop it by allowing law enforcement to do their job. It's that simple. And yet, the pattern, the deliberately engineered pattern by the Democrats continued in Portland. Result, one Trump supporter dead. Executed in the streets. Earlier this week, Trump once again offered Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler backup. I'll send federal help. I'll help you quell the violence in your city. Even you say, Ted, that these rioters are trying to lock people in buildings and burn them alive. We've played that audio before from Ted Wheeler. Wheeler put out a tweet mocking the president for offering the extra federal law enforcement aid his city clearly so desperately needs. And then what? Not enough law enforcement to deal with the situation, as always happens. That's on purpose. And two things happen. The rioters found Ted Wheeler's apartment complex and chained themselves in the lobby. They're demanding he resign and defund the police. And one Trump supporter is dead. So again, this is why this is not happening in red areas. Red areas have angry people. Red areas have people who might like to be in the streets. But red areas do not have elected officials who deliberately hold law enforcement back or refuse to provide enough law enforcement to stop the rioting in the streets, and they let their cities burn. It's a tactic. But Joe's going to leave the basement and he's going to go blame it on Trump. Wait, no, we're glad he's finally coming to the conversation. I mean, he wouldn't even acknowledge any of this was going on for 3 months. So now that he's acknowledged it, it's Trump's fault. You know what that tells you? This is killing him in the polls. And we're seeing evidence of that. A devastating series of polls has just been released by the Democracy Institute. It shows for the first time Trump up nationally and in the battleground states. Shows Trump leading the national popular vote 48 with Biden at 45. Across the battlegrounds of Florida, Iowa, Minnesota, and Pennsylvania, Trump at 49, Biden at 42. Here's Florida, Trump 47, Biden 44. Minnesota, Trump 48, Biden 45. New Hampshire, Trump 47, Biden 43. And the author of the poll tweeted at Poll Watch, Trump got 8% of black vote in 2016. I've been predicting 11 to 13% of the black vote in 2020. I'm thinking he could get 14 to 16% now. So there you have it, folks. Still a long way to go to the election. Just want to thank you for listening to today's podcast. Encourage you to subscribe and to share with your like-minded friends and family members across the country.
oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.